but it's really comfortable to travel like this, and you feel the, you take the time to go there, and you pass through all the countries. While when you take, when you take the plane, you only go from A to B, and now we go from A to B to C to D to E.
I'm also really excited to get to know people in Northern Norway and learn more about Sami culture, and actually, you know, meet the people that we're already in contact with and deepen knowledge that we've been researching for quite some time now.
There is always a summary for policymakers of the IPCC reports, but there's no summary for people.
So what we have is a very scientific aim. I mean, it's a research project at the end, and we were wondering, what do we do with that knowledge?
Science communication is kind of the bridge between science and everything else, so the public. When we talk about climate science communication, then for me personally, there's also an element of motivation in there. We want to motivate people to take this crisis seriously.
There was one funny moment when he said he watched a movie from Al Gore, because I did too. I think everybody did this.
Listen to experts and maybe invite minorities to your podcast, and because I think there are too many opinions about privileges by privileged people out there already.
Let's talk about the climate. Welcome to the Climate Talk. That's the podcast accompanying the climate walk through Europe. We are Nina, Leonie and Norina, and that's the Climate Talk. Welcome.
From our recent kickoff event in Vienna a couple of days ago, because yay, it finally started on the 5th of June. The Climate Walk project, yeah, started. We are hiking through Europe, and two team members already started at the North Cape. Oh god, it just took so long, I think, to get to that starting point in the first place.
Nina, I heard that you got visit, is that right?
Yeah, true. Those two people who are now walking, they've been visiting me a couple of days, or I met them while they were still on their way north here in Malmö, and we're going to listen to them in a second how they're doing. But maybe first we can introduce ourselves. Who is we? Who's talking today?
I'm Leonie. I'm also a part of the media art team from Climate Walk. I'm currently in Italy while we're recording this podcast. So we're in three different countries, and yeah, I'm leading over to Norina.
Hi everybody, so my name is Norina, I'm currently sitting in Vienna, so nice to see you girls from abroad, and I'm also eager to soon hike in Norway as well, and yeah, I'm very excited to hear what Anna and Marcus are going to tell us, and also for the interview. What are we going to do today? Nina, you also want to present yourself and maybe tell us what we're going to do today.
Yeah, sure. And I had completely forgotten you will be the first one of us hiking. That's exciting. Yeah, I'm Nina. I'm recording currently from Sweden. And yeah, what we're gonna do today, as Well, the thing is, as Climate Walk, Climate Talk podcast, we want to accompany our wanderers and the experience that they're making while hiking. So this is what we're going to do in the next few months. But today specifically, because this is the starting point for our journey, we wanted to talk about our motivation for this project and also about communication in that sense. And while we sit comfortably here, we can listen to what I've been talking to with Anna and Markus when they were on their way to the North Cape a couple of days ago.
Tell me how you prepared yourself for the journey.
The preparation for the whole walk actually was done by the whole team, by the different dimensions, like the route planning or the research or also the media art part, because it all fits together and we had to adapt to what was already there from last year and also extend all the information. So it was at one part the whole team that was preparing the whole walk, the start of the walk, but also some input of ourselves.
Like general things, like what we have to pack and where we can sleep, and also specify on the route, because at one point you have the route, and once you really get into researching the route, then you realize, oh, okay, there might be some distances of multiple days where you don't have the possibility to shop, and so you kind of have to, you know, adapt the plan or maybe find ways to not having to carry tons of fruits and vegetables with you, and yeah, tricks like that.
What is one item that you have packed which is maybe surprising? What is one special item that you packed?
Surprising. the kazoo, yeah.
What?
The kazoo.
It's an instrument, yeah. That is kind of random. What else?
Is it for campfire evenings, or why did you pack it?
I just thought it's like, it doesn't really weigh anything and we might have fun for 2 days, then we get annoyed of it, but yeah, I thought it might be some entertainment.
I think what's kind of obscure about our walk is that we have to carry quite a lot of equipment, technical equipment, which many hikers, wanderers don't really have to do. So that makes it a little more complicated.
How is it now traveling north by several trains? How do you feel? How does the traveling go?
At some point it felt really fast, because also all the people that we talked to when we told them that we already arrived in Malmö, they were like really surprised. But at some stages in one train I wasn't sure anymore if we were on the train to Copenhagen or Malmö or still in the train to Hamburg. But it's really comfortable to travel like this, and you feel you take the time to go there and you pass through all the countries, while when you take the plane you only go from A to B, and now we go from A to B to C to D to E. It's exciting actually.
Yeah, and also aside from the train part, which is a lot of fun of course, but I'm also really excited to get to know people in Northern Norway and learn more about Sami culture, and actually, you know, meet the people that we're already in contact with, mm-hmm. Hopefully collaborate and organize a workshop together and deepen knowledge that we've been researching for quite some time now, and now actually really apply all the things that, yeah, we have put or that we've collected in theory. Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
While Anna and Markus are hiking today, we're going to talk a bit about why we do this project in the first place, and also why do we report as a podcast about it, which leads us to the topic of science communication. Because, well, the aim for our listeners, the aim of this Climate World project is that we want to learn how people in Europe experience climate change, and also other changes in society and culture and politics that they experience. So what we have is a very scientific aim? I mean, it's a research project at the end, and we were wondering, what do we do with that knowledge? So here is where communication plays into the game, or specifically climate change, science, and communication. And for that, we want to talk about, why is it important to discuss it, and how can we discuss climate change, and also what it means for us as a project. And for that, we invited a colleague to talk about it today, Gabriel Baunach. Hello, Gabriel.
Hello, nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to hear you. And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going to introduce you. Gabriel founded the platform ClimAware to explain the UN IPCC reports and in general facts about climate change and also solutions, for exactly that reason, to build a bridge between science and the public. And you also, for that purpose, have your own podcast with by now 6 episodes about it. And you already met the Climate Walk project before. And today we're going to have you as a guest again to exchange some perspectives about the role of communication.
Yeah, thank you so much for the invitation.
You're welcome. How are you today?
I'm well. I'm good. I'm back in Berlin where I work currently, and I'm very excited for our conversation about science communication, because it's so important. We saw it in the COVID pandemic and also in the climate crisis. So I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
That's great. We're happy to have you here. So yeah, let's go into it.
So also from my side, Gabriel, thank you very much for being here. I'm really excited. So talking and communication is quite mundane. We're talking every day, like we're talking at the moment. But it's about very specific type of conversation we're talking about. It's science communication. So what is its task, its main? Why do we need it?
So from my point of view, science communication is about informing, educating, and raising awareness about scientific knowledge. So science communication is kind of the bridge between science and everything else, so the public. So in a way you can say, or I usually say it in German, it's kind of a translation from difficult scientific wording, graphs, data and stuff that usually people in the everyday life don't deal so much with. So it's kind of a translation of these concepts and facts into somewhat easier language, but without distortion, of course, or too much of simplification. And in that sense, it's a necessary element of democracy, I think, because we want to have well-informed citizens that can vote or make relevant decisions. And I think when we talk about climate science communication, then for me personally, there's also an element of motivation in there. We want to motivate people to take this crisis seriously, because there's so much at stake, the health and lives of people. So we also want to motivate with science communication in terms of in the realm of climate crisis to act, as we saw it, for example, in the corona pandemic, but now also in the climate crisis. And one of the major or the major role or responsibility, of course, comes to media and science journalists that build that bridge between science and the public. So I think that's what its task and role is about.
Yeah, it seems very important to the climate walk, as we are combining like these two things, like science, like our scientific aim, talking to people, doing interviews and stuff, and communicating this to the people, also like an activistic part. I'm leading over to Leonie. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, thank you, Norina. I just wanted to say, you already talked about your motivation taking this role of communicating about science and about climate change. And can you tell us more about your personal story, how you came to talking about it, specifically why you started this project?
Yes, of course. I collected so much knowledge about climate change and the climate crisis already starting in school when I did internships at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Research or at the research center in Jülich in the climate department, or at a course during the summer break, 2 weeks in the Deutsche Schülerakademie about energy and climate. So I learned a lot about the climate crisis and our need for renewable energies. And then after my studies in mechanical engineering, focusing on energy technology, I joined the United Nations Climate Change Secretariat for an internship. I joined and I participated in the 25th UN Climate Change Conference. So with all this knowledge that I collected, I felt a kind of a responsibility to share that with the public, especially because I saw a gap in this bridge between science and climate science and the public. I felt like there's no adequate element or a player there that translates these very complex scientific reports by the IPCC to the broad public. And I felt like media didn't actually live up to its responsibility to inform the public regularly and in an easy and understandable, easy to grasp way about what these IPCC reports actually tell us. Because I already mentioned, I think the major responsibility to bridge this understanding, this process of understanding between science and the public is media and science journalists. But back in early 2020, I saw a gap there. There is always a summary for policymakers of the IPCC reports, but there's no summary for people, for like everyday citizens. And that was kind of the starting point for me, that I wanted to have a report that is very easy to understand and summarizes the findings and the facts of the IPCC. So I sat down 3 months in a library, read through the IPCC reports, compiled my own Word document, kind of a summary for myself. And then I went over this summary and made it even easier. I read it to friends, and then this ClimAware report came out of that. And then I was aware that most people don't like to read 40 pages, even if it's easier to understand. So I thought, okay, it has to be a podcast or videos. And that's how the ClimAware initiative got started. But it all started kind of with this gap that I saw that media didn't fill out, at least back in early 2020, from my point of view.
That's very interesting that you say also that you saw this change, and particularly in the past 2 years. And in a way, it's helpful that we can see it gets a bit more attention. There are more people communicating about it. What I'm wondering then a bit with specifically climate change communication is actually, because we have so many information nowadays and it's coming from all different sides, and I'm wondering, are there too many crises currently, or that the climate crisis is in a way in a danger of drowning in that?
Yes, I would think so, that the climate topic, the climate problem, is in danger of drowning, as you said it. But luckily, over the last 2 years, the big media outlets developed their own climate and regular climate formats, like a climate podcast by the Spiegel, Tagesspiegel. There is the climate reporter in Germany, for example, that have their own climate podcast, the Klima Update. So there are many more climate podcasts that evolved over the last 2 years, besides ClimAware and some others. Luisa Neubauer, for example, started her own climate podcast. So there are regular informing formats that are that just focus on the climate crisis, even if even as something like the war in the Ukraine or the corona pandemic is still happening. So this is, I think, one of the most important things, that we need even more and broader formats for something as big and as long of a crisis, a kind of a marathon crisis like climate change. So something like a Klima vor Acht initiative for the Tagesschau in Germany, which is one of the major news formats in Germany. It's every evening at 8 p.m. Or in Austria, you have the ZIP 2. So in these formats where you reach millions of people, and not only in the green young bubble, but everybody, also 60 plus people that still watch television, that's, I think, very important to not get or to not let the climate crisis drown as we have more and more crises. Because I think this there is no time or no decade anymore in this century where we don't have any crises. I think we have to focus on the climate crisis while dealing with the other crises that evolve, and we don't know yet what other crises will happen. And it's important that we still focus on the climate crisis.
Now, as you have convinced everybody of the importance of science communication, I want to ask you something about the language we need to communicate in this way, also for us to prepare ourselves as a climate work. How should we communicate? What language do we need? You have suggested like these two words I remember from the climate walk uni course. It was real talk. I really liked it very much. And maybe you can explain today to our audience, what does it mean? What is your advice here?
Yes, it's not my concept. I just picked it up and I usually like to talk about it. It's a concept by Climate Outreach, which is an NGO, and they have this handbook about climate communication. It's called The Talking Climate Handbook from 2019. And there in this handbook, they summarized all the recommendations about climate communication in these two words, very easy and simple. So real talk, we need more real talk about the climate crisis, and it stands for respect your conversational partner and find common ground. I think that's the starting point. When you are in a situation where the climate topic comes up, I think it's very important to immediately check your own attitude and approach with which you enter this conversation, because it's not easy. It's not easy to talk about the climate crisis. It's not easy to talk about any topic that is quite emotional. So I think we have to be aware as soon as words like feminism or climate or whatever come up, to check our attitude, to have a meaningful and fruitful conversation. And the other, the second word, E, is quite nice. Enjoy the conversation. It's also allowed to have fun in a conversation about complex and emotional topics. A stands for ask questions, and that's pretty important, especially at the beginning of such a conversation, because you have to check your conversational partner. Where does he come from? What are his or her values? What are his or her beliefs? And in this way, when you ask questions, instead of right away stating your opinion and facts, you can get a feeling for who is that person that I'm talking to, and how can I frame my own opinions and beliefs in a way that this person can understand and take it. And only if the other person understands and takes in your opinion, something will change or happen with him or her. And I think that's always a goal of climate communication, as I said, also to motivate people to act. And in this way, it's very important, especially in the beginning of the conversation, to ask questions. And then when you ask questions, of course, you have to listen. And that's the L. Listen and show you've heard with eye contact, maybe a bit of nodding. I mean, this is kind of very into detail now, but just be focused, be interested in what the other person is saying. And then at some point in the conversation, there's also room usually to tell your own story, and that's the T. Tell your story, make it personal, maybe open up. I have the experience that the more I open up with my fears also and my feelings, the more the other person opens up as well. And only if we are open, we can take in other opinions, other viewpoints. And then A, actions make it easier, but they don't fix it. So if you already act on climate change and tell about your actions, that might be inspiring for the other person, but it doesn't have to be that way. That's why it doesn't always fix it. And there's also a study about how climate conversations start, and the most important factor to kickstart a climate conversation is that one person already does something or act on climate change. So if a person doesn't eat meat on a barbecue festival or tells about the last climate strike on Friday last week, these are kickstarters for climate conversations. So actions are kind of the starting point. And then L, again, from talk, learn from the conversation. That's maybe after the conversation, to take some notes or maybe just reflect on the conversation. And then K, keep going and keep connected. Sometimes we have frustrating conversations. I think that's something we can't avoid in a complex and emotional topic like climate crisis. But don't let yourself down. Keep going, keep connected with other people also. That's the real talk. And I think this attitude approach is very important, to be clear, but also calm and humble during the conversation.
Thanks, Gabriel. I think that was a very good summary and also for me a good repetition. I want to ask a follow-up question on the talk. You said personal story to open up and make it more personal. Which story do you tell? Do you want to share the story with us?
Yes, my story started in school in 2007 when our teacher showed us the climate documentary by Al Gore, An Inconvenient Truth. This was the first time that I learned about climate change, as it was called back then. Now it evolved into a climate crisis, but back then it was called climate change. And this term, I never heard about it before, and it was quite shocking for me that something so big, so global, threatens my future, of which I had a very positive view back then. I was aware of problems that humankind had, hunger and poverty and injustice and stuff like that, and wars. But I kind of had the feeling that we are on a way of progress, and that humanity would at some point in the future solve all these issues. And this view was, I wouldn't say shattered, but questioned by this documentary. So I was very shocked. And ever since this topic of climate change and the climate crisis was in my life, and I learned about it everywhere where I could, but I still had the feeling, okay, we can do it, there's enough time, humanity just needs more technology, and we are on a way of progress even in solving climate change. But what really hit me was the IPCC report, about the special report about 1.5 degrees Celsius of global warming in October 2018. When that came out, I saw this graph of how deep and how steep and how quickly the emissions need to drop in order to reach 1.5 degrees target. And in simultaneously, the Fridays for Future movement flooded the streets with Greta Thunberg and Luisa Neubauer in Germany. And all these young people, even younger than me, kids from school, demanded a safe and peaceful and sustainable future. And this really hit me emotionally. And I developed a bit of climate anxiety from end of 2018 until mid of 2019. It was a very troubling time for me and myself. And then becoming active on solving the climate crisis by founding Climate Aware, communicating about it, joining the climate strikes and doing more and more actively, so contributing to solving the issue, that really helped me also emotionally to deal with this issue and to also allow a bit of cognitive dissonance, as you say it in psychology. So I recognize, of course, I'm not perfect. I still emit greenhouse gas emissions. Until 2018, I also drove a car. I went on the airplane and going on vacation. So I came from being a climate sinner, not to a saint, but just doing my steps in my personal life, step by step, and allowing being unperfect, just by, becoming active in a collective structural way. So this is kind of my story from 2007 until now.
And it's funny that you mentioned in your own personal story yourself, you show how communication, or like how media and specific events, had an influence now on you personally. I remember in English class we watched also an Inconvenient Truth, so I remember that it had so many people talked about it, and it's really interesting to see how big of an impact documentaries like that one, or also The Life on Our Planet, for example, is another example what so many people refer to, that it had an impact for themselves. And it leads for me over to this question of who gets attached to such stories, or who connects to them, because you touched upon this topic yourself earlier, this question of inclusiveness and diversity in the climate justice movement itself. And we're wondering about that. How is it? Because it is a challenge in a way to talk to people in an inclusive way. And that can mean using simple language, sign language, or including different voices of people who are, for example, marginalized, to make the movement in itself also more diverse. Because, I mean, we just have to look on our own project. We consist mainly of one group of people. You see it in our podcast now, white, female, German-speaking, young academics in a way. So we're wondering a bit about how science communication can also be a key for this whole movement in itself to be more inclusive and diverse. And I was wondering, maybe for the finish of this discussion, if you have any thoughts on that.
Yes, I think science and science communication, also on the topic of climate, needs to become more inclusive and diverse itself. For example, the IPCC itself, there's still a lot of male white scientists from the global north, the so-called global north, that write, or that actually do the research, and then they compile and write these reports. I mean, the IPCC is aware of that problem, that they don't have a gender balance and they don't represent all countries in a just and equal way. And they're working on that, and there's progress being made from the IPCC report AR4 to AR5 that came out in 2014, and now the AR6 that came out last year and this year in different parts. So there's progress being made, and they are aware of it. They have they measure their progress, and that this is, I think, one of the most important things to have some kind of to measure these things because you cannot change something that you don't measure, I think. But actually, I'm a white male academic from Germany as well, and super privileged in that way. And also, I'm not an expert on that topic. So my advice would be to listen to experts and maybe invite minorities to your podcast and ask them this question, both the experts and the people that are that you want to reach or that you want to represent more. Because I think there are too many opinions about privileges by privileged people out there already. So maybe, I shouldn't talk too much about that, because I'm both not an expert and I'm in that privileged position.
Gabriel, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, having this conversation with us, and we wish you all the best for the future.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the podcast, and I wish you all the best for your future work and, of course, the walk across Europe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Wow, that was super interesting. What did you think about that? What we just heard? Did anything stay particularly in your mind?
I really love to talk about real talk, and I definitely want to engage more in real talk. And yeah, as he also said, later in a talk with us, make it our identity more and act like this in on every level, really on just in an honest way.
For me, there were several moments, or I really loved the whole talk and interview. There was one funny moment when he said he watched a movie from Al Gore, because I did too. I think everybody did that. And yeah, it also reminded me that this could be my personal story for the future, let's see. Because it was really like an astonishing film back then when I saw it in school as well. And I loved also the last question, his answer. So it was really nice that he was self-reflecting himself that much, and relativizing his expertise, and also telling us that he's not the expert on that, and we should really ask people who are experiencing that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I think it reflects very well to me, or connects to the aims that we have with the project in total, in a sense, because I mean we set out this project also to give a voice or to listen to those groups that are heard less, so ordinary people instead of politicians or marginalized people, but also hearing what their concern is or what they might know. So it really connected well. But yeah, it was very nice to reflect on our own goals in terms of providing a perspective that is also relevant for all the people in Europe, and also to take action. As we talked about, not just listen and talk and having all this communication, but also what is it for? It's about motivating people. It's about having some action at the end. And through this language that applies more to people here. So not just talk about the Pacific Islands at the end that are drowning. This is a story that we heard often, but also talk about that, I don't know, people in Wales or in Denmark at the coast, that they're also losing their houses. Just, I think for me, in a way, this is what the Climate War Project is also for, to see the stories here, the personal stories that people have here, and that they might feel more emotionally attached to, because this is what might motivate people here more to do something or to listen to it. So yeah, really good talk. And I think this is what our podcast, in a sense, can be a tool for, or a medium to support those aims that we have as an overall project. So I guess, considering what we just heard, like our task, what we want to do in the next few months is set out, and you as listeners, obviously you can hold us accountable for how well we're doing, because we want to show in the next episodes and how the walk is going, also what issues ecologically, socially we encounter on the way, and you can listen to that, reflect on how what you think about this episode, you can let us know, or in best case, obviously, you can get involved yourself and hike with us. This is the best way to follow us on our journey that leads us from the North Cape through Northern Europe and then the Benelux states and through Germany to Austria at the end, and on the other hand through Southern Europe from Portugal through Spain and France, Italy, also back to Austria. So if you're interested in walking part of this way with us, feel invited, and otherwise you can continue following our podcast and hear about our journey, or also watch it. We have another group of team members that are gonna show our journey visually through an Octo documentary. So follow us on our social media and then you see where our journey is going. Okay, that's it for me. And we will finish this episode with some music. So Leonie, you wanted to introduce some music to us, is that right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. At the end of each episode, we want to introduce you to a band from Europe that's talking about climate change in their music. And this time we are introducing you to Krafetska. And now they're going to tell you in their message about the role and importance of music. Their message is in German. And you're going to hear the song There Is No Planet B in the following. And this is the point where we say goodbye.
Bye.
Aho, ihr Lieben. Ob ihr gerade wandernd unterwegs seid oder von zu Hause aus zuhört. Ich bin Anni von Krafetska und wir freuen uns richtig, heute dabei zu sein und finden es ganz, ganz wichtig, unseren Senf dazuzugeben und unseren Beitrag zu leisten. Vielleicht hört ihr es, im Hintergrund tobt ein ganz schönes Unwetter und das passt erschreckend gut dazu, dass wir gerade in den Austausch darüber gehen, was wir schon für prägende Naturerfahrungen und Erlebnisse innerhalb der Band gemacht haben. Da kam ganz schön viel hoch und zusammen und ja, sind uns einige Situationen ziemlich direkt eingefallen. Sowas wie die blühenden Wiesen aus der Kindheit, heute vertrocknet und fast ohne Insekten vorzufinden. Oder den ehemaligen Kindheits- und Zuhausewald jetzt gerodet zu sehen. Ich würde euch gerne noch mal ein bisschen dazu erzählen, wie es zu unserem Song No Planet B gekommen ist. Das war im März 2018, ich glaube an einem Donnerstag tatsächlich erst, da wurden wir von der lokalen Fridays for Future Gruppe in Witten eingeladen, auf einer Demo am kommenden Tag zu spielen. Und da, aber auch spätestens da, war klar, es muss irgendwie ein passender Song her. Und dann ist in einer ganz schönen Nacht- und Nebelaktion No Planet B entstanden. Und ein Zitat aus einem Song einer anderen Band, das zum Thema passt und das wir euch gerne mit auf den Weg geben möchten, ist: Musik allein mag keine Lösung sein, aber sie ist ein Dorn im Ohr. Und so versuchen wir mit unserer Musik irgendwie einen Teil dazu beizutragen, etwas zu verändern. Wir versuchen, auf Missstände hinzuweisen und wir versuchen, den Menschen, die an Lösungen arbeiten, vielleicht zumindest den ein oder anderen befreienden Tanzabend zu bescheren. Wir wissen, dass Songs schreiben, Musik machen und reden allein natürlich nicht reicht. Aber ey Leute, wir wissen auch, wir können was verändern. Wir können jetzt was verändern und zwar zusammen. Und wir sind gemeinsam bewusst und stark und wir halten uns und wir gehen diesen Weg mit euch und gemeinsam. Und wir stecken dabei möglichst viele damit an. It involves all of us, you and me. I think you understand, there's no planet B. Aho.
It involves all of us, you and me. Atlantik. Plastiktüten, die schwimmen im Meer. Doch irgendwo, bestimmt schon bald, setzt die Natur sich zu Wehr. So nimmt die Ironie des Schicksals weiter ihren Lauf. Stück für Stück durch Fisch und Fleisch fressen wir den Müll selbst wieder auf. In balls all of us, you and me. Why don't you understand there is no planet B? Teach us in school, but nobody's there. Fridays for future. Teach us in school, but nobody's there. Fridays for future. Jubelt im Chor. Doch was am anderen Ende unserer Welt geschieht, kommt nicht mal in der Tagesschau vor. Naturkatastrophen sind folglich der Lohn für Abgas, Öl und noch mehr Kohle. Scheißt ihr auf unsere Generation? It involves all of us, you and me. Why don't you understand there is no planet B? Schmutzig, können wir die Sonne nicht mehr sehen. Da bringt's auch nix, weit weg zu fliegen. Ihr solltet öfter mal das Fahrrad nehmen. Es sind nicht nur die Menschen, auch viele Tiere müssen fliehen. Karl der Käfer demonstriert und zieht mit uns nach Berlin. In den Worms, all of us, you and me. Why don't you understand there is no planet? Science school, but nobody's there.